Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Friday morning. Something that happened yesterday that we had so much going on, especially with the big news concerning Nashville SC. We'll have Ian Ayer at the bottom of the hour. Was Myles Garrett getting reinstated? We told you earlier in the week that he had met with the commissioner, Roger Goodell, actually with Roger Goodell, and they came away and said the six games that he served at the end of the season was indeed enough, and that
I think it was Wednesday he was actually reinstated.
He'll be reinstated. So he sat down with Mina Kimes from ESPN, and this is what or how that conversation went.
They were still throwing the ball. Decided I was going to go make a play. So he still had the ball. He's winding back to throw. I'm going, you know, to hit him in the strike zone. I'm not trying to do anything illegal. I should go to take him down. He said some words as we're going down.
What did he say to you?
I mean, he called me the N-word. He called me a stupid N-word. I don't like, I don't say the N-word, whether it's, you know, with A, E-R. To me personally, just shouldn't be said. And whether it's known by family, friends, anyone. And I don't want to use it because I don't want to find that appropriate around me for anyone to use. So when he said it, you know, it kind of sparked something, but I still tried to let it go and still walk away. Once he came back, it kind of reignited the situation.
He denied that he said what you're alleging, and then after your initial appeal, it leaked out, and you said, I wish this didn't get out at all. Mm-hmm. Why was that?
Because I didn't want to try to use it as justification for my actions, because there's nothing to justify. Like, there's nothing that I can say or do to justify what I did on that day. I'm not saying there's nothing to justify it, and I didn't do anything wrong. And I know what happened. I know what I heard. And people say things, you know, when they're heated or they're full of emotion, and I leave it on the field. He said it, but that was 3 months ago, 4 months ago. Now I leave that behind.
There you go. That was some of the sit-down piece for Outside the Lines, Mina Kimes with ESPN and Myles Garrett. And Myles Garrett has gone back to what he said, not initially, because remember, that was what took everybody off guard. He didn't come out and say that right away on that Thursday night game between Pittsburgh and Cleveland, but he has gone back to Mason Rudolph, called him the N-word. And I don't know how you guys feel about this, but there's a lot of layers to it. I think this is where I am. I'll start it. One, I told you at the time I had a problem with, okay, why didn't you come out? Like, I agree with everything Myles Garrett said. And you know what? I can really appreciate the fact that he didn't want to say it. And so I can appreciate that, okay? It's offensive. But to me, everybody knows that, okay? And we know the level of how bad that is, and it's offensive. And if that really happened, why didn't you come out right away and say it? Does that mean it didn't happen? No, because you know what? There are rape victims that don't come out initially.
Right.
And sometimes they come out a long time afterwards. And that doesn't mean they're not telling the truth. Yes, it leaves the door open for a lot of people to go, why are you coming out now? Why are you saying something now? Why didn't you say something? Like, that's bad. Something should have been said right away. Look, you know, everybody handles things differently. Not everybody handles things the way that, you know, some of us would think. Me personally, if I'm him, I come out and say, look, I don't, what I did was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. I've made a huge mistake. But let me just tell you why he set me off, and I didn't appreciate it. He said, you know, he called me the N-word, and that's what set me off, and I shouldn't have acted that way. I know you can't rip off a helmet and hit somebody on the head with it. I get it, and I'm going to get in trouble. I know that. But he also shouldn't have said that to me, and I take exception to that. I don't appreciate it, and it will never be tolerated in my book. That's me. I said that right away. So I have a little trouble on why this is coming out. And the other layer, but like I said, I'm also willing to say that doesn't mean he's not telling the truth, because people come forward later and they are telling the truth. The other part is, I know it's a football game and I know it's loud, but there was a lot of players around that play. And I don't understand how nobody else could have heard it. Like, other players have come out and said, we didn't hear it. I mean, no one has come forward and said, you know what? Myles Garrett is absolutely telling the truth. I heard it. He is right. He is right. How come nobody has come forward and said they heard it? Once again, I'm not saying it didn't happen. But isn't it weird that there would be a lot of players around that play and nobody hears it but Myles Garrett? That's it? He's the only person that heard it. Did he whisper it to him?
That is plausible, though.
Like, you would think in a football game with, you know, at that point, juice is flowing. You're screaming. I mean, you would think those guys are screaming at each other. Did he whisper it to him? I mean, how does nobody hear it?
I think it's possible that nobody would hear it. I think.
I said it's possible.
Yeah.
I still find it hard to believe.
I don't know if it's hard to believe or not hard to believe. It's hard to prove, I think. I listened to that interview. The first thing I asked myself is, how does a guy that sounds as good as he sounds in that interview just fly off the handle the way he did? I mean, he lost his mind in that moment, right? That was the thing about that whole thing. He couldn't rein it back in. That was why I think the punishment was so severe, is he had time to regroup a number of different times during that action. Like, it's one thing to, you know, in the heat of the moment do one thing, but he kept going and he took the helmet and he swung the helmet. I mean, it kept snowballing. Somewhere you're like, Myles, really? Whoa, come back. So as far as the allegation, it sounds believable. As he's saying it, it sounds believable.
Well, to think somebody could get out of control mad because of that? Sure.
Well, I don't think it justifies what he did.
Well, I didn't say justify. I'm saying you said he was spiraling out of control.
Right, he was.
He was out of control. He could not reel it back in. So I'm just backing you up saying, well, if that happened, I could see why. Doesn't mean it's okay. You know, his actions should still be punished, right. But you could then understand why he was out of control if that indeed happened.
Yeah, but then also, I think it's also plausible that he thought he heard one thing, and maybe in the chaos, it sounded like one thing, and it was actually something else. I guess that's possible.
He was so incensed, like, I don't think he had time to really think about that.
If you compute in your head, this guy just called me the N-word, then you believe
but
it.
But if
right?
it has a question mark after it, could you really get that irate? You're like, if you're going, did he just say that? Or is he emphatic? And if he's emphatic, that's where I'm like, okay. But
then
how
why not
does
come
you
out
know,
and
right,
say that right
why
away?
Why didn't you come right? I go back to my initial points. Then why didn't you emphatically come out right afterwards and say, look, here's the deal. That's where I wrestle with this.
Sure. I would love to hear Mason Rudolph say, you know,
He's
denied it, but did he say something? Like, I would like to have a conversation with Mason. Did you say something that might have sounded different to him? Or did you not say anything? Did somebody else say something? I'm just trying to figure out what went on here. You know, I'd like to hear from Mason Rudolph.
Sure.
Was he not pretty emphatic afterwards that I did not say that? I mean,
he was.
He wasn't like wishy-washy, like, come on, man. I mean, he was pretty emphatic saying that did not happen. I did not say that.
Let me throw this theory at you. Number one, we all agree because you were out of town, but Willie, we had Jeff Fisher on the day after this happened.
Right.
And one thing that Jeff Fisher said was he could not believe the job that the PR staff of the Cleveland Browns, how poorly they handled it, because they put Freddie Kitchens out there, basically hanging him out to dry, didn't have him prepared at all, didn't have a statement. You know, they let Myles Garrett talk right after the game. So you brought up, Darren, why didn't he just come out and say that, well, this is what happened right away, that he took some time after the punishment was handed out. Then he brought it up. Is it feasible to think that he was told not to bring it up, that he's telling the Browns, like, this is what this dude was saying, this is what Mason Rudolph was saying, and they're like, nah, it's going to make you look even worse if you bring this up now.
I don't care if I'm Myles Garrett.
Well,
honestly,
I understand that, but in the heat of the moment, when right after it happens, he knows he stepped in it, he knows he's in trouble. If the people that he supposedly trusts and is supposed to trust are telling him, and this is all speculation on my part, are telling him, no, let's not go down that road yet because it's going to make you look worse, which some people might view it that way, of, oh, he's just trying to get out of it. He's making this a race thing. Is it feasible to think that they're telling him not to come out, and then he finally decides, you know what, no, I'm going to come out with this?
Is it feasible the Cleveland Browns would handle something poorly?
Because they botched it.
Yes. I would think anything football-related, anything. Is it feasible the Cleveland Browns would handle it the wrong way? Sure, yeah.
Right.
You'd be an idiot to argue that the Browns know how to do stuff right. So is that possible? Sure. I'm not saying
you're wrong. I'm just playing devil's advocate of different things that could possibly have happened.
I'm just saying, look, you listen to Myles Garrett. He's pretty, when he's sitting down, and he's said it before, but in this sit down, he's not wavering. He's not, mm-hmm. I mean, he's telling you this is what happened in his mind. And he is telling you also how offensive it is to him and how you shouldn't say it, anybody, including him, and which is why he wouldn't even say it. So you can tell the level of what this means. So if it means that much to him, I don't care what the Cleveland Browns PR staff. The PR staffs are not always right how they handle things, okay, in any sport. In fact, PR staffs are wrong a lot on how to handle things. So you know what I would tell that PR staff? Well, guess what? It didn't happen to you.
Right.
So I don't care what you think I should say. I'm going to say what I need to say.
But that's – and you're not wrong. I completely agree with you.
He's a pretty well-thought-out guy, as you could tell in that interview. So
– right, but
– I think he comes across very well.
Yeah,
he does. He does. But think about right after it happened, though. I mean, he's going through – we all want to – okay. With this situation, we want to look at Mason Rudolph as the victim-ish – because Myles Garrett went off and went crazy. But you also have to turn around and look at, he's remorseful. He's scared of what's going to happen. Did he just ruin his career? There's probably a lot of different things going through the mind of Myles Garrett. And if you have advisors or whatever you want to call them around you telling you one thing, in the heat of the moment right after, you might listen to him. I hear what you're saying, Darren, and I agree with you. But put yourself in his shoes right after it happened. I mean, it's one thing if he's very well thought out and he's like, you know what? No. I appreciate the advice. This needs to come out. And if you didn't do that, then okay. But if he's just trying to process it all and then it took some time after he processed it, you know what? They're wrong. I need to come out with this. Then I can understand that too.
It is very possible everything we've just laid out, somebody's nailed it. It's very possible.
Right, and we'll probably never know.
I was going to say, but the problem is I don't know if we're ever going to find out the real truth.
Yeah.
I don't know.
At this point, I don't know if it really matters.
No, it does. Actually, it does matter. This is a big allegation, okay? And if Mason Rudolph really said that, he deserves everything that comes afterwards. But if he didn't, Myles Garrett deserves a lot of heat. So, no, it is not just, No, this is a big deal. You come out and you say that about somebody,
right.
It is a big deal. And if Myles Garrett is lying about it, he deserves to get punished badly.
So how do you find out? How do you find out the truth?
If Mason Rudolph said it, he deserves to get punished badly. So it is a big deal.
Do you foresee – because, number one, if Mason Rudolph said it to begin with, I'm not surprised he's denying it, that he denied it from the get-go. Do you think he's going to reverse course now? Because I don't.
I don't know.
I think he's going to continue to deny.
I don't know. I don't know what the truth is.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody's lying. Right? You've got two different stories, so somebody's not telling the truth.
And as you know, there are two sides to every story, and somewhere in the middle lies the truth.
So I don't know what that is, but somebody...
Your point, I am surprised that nobody that else that was in the middle of that hasn't come out and go, yeah, this is what happened.
It's not like it was just those two. Like, he sacked him, and those two are just laying on the ground on top of each other, and no one's around, right? I mean, this play, we've all seen it.
Right.
A ton. There are bodies everywhere. It turned into a melee. So I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't know if we're ever going to find out the truth. But it's interesting, and I think we deserve the truth. I think somebody deserves to be punished. whatever happened, if Myles Garrett is not telling the truth, he deserves more punishment. If he is telling the truth, Mason Rudolph deserves harsh punishment. But this is serious stuff, man. You can't just come out and say that if it's not true. And if it is true, then he deserves to be called out and then deserves everything that follows.
Completely agree.
Willie, you've got a good word about the fine folks at Lee Company.
I will give you a good word about the fine folks at Lee Company. 615-567-1000 is the phone number to call. Remember, maintenance. It's Friday. You probably have been putting something off at your home or at your business that you've had on a list. Got to get the door fixed or the windows or the floor or the ceiling. Well, Lee Company can help you with that. Better yet, you don't even have to call them if you don't want to. If you'd rather just go on and make an online appointment at LeeCompany.com, you are welcome to do that. LeeCompany.com, a website. Make the online appointment. Tell them the problem. They'll be on their way to fix it in no time. Then you can get on with your weekend. That's a good feeling for you. Also, remember the home maintenance plan that I tell you about every week. Heating, cooling, electric, and plumbing. You get the yearly checkups to make sure those systems in your house are working properly. And that will also give you peace of mind because you'll know you'll be saving money over the long term with that. 615-567-1000 for Lee Company. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
I think baseball should come out and say, you know what? Moving forward, all apologies go through the Houston Astros. That would be cool because I think they know how to handle that. They're good at...
Are you saying that for an entertainment value?
They're good at apologies.
Are they now?
Or not.
I'm going to say probably not.
This is going to be...
do a hard pass on that?
If we had to guess right now, is this season going to be successful? Are they going to show the world they don't need to bang trash cans and steal signs and be mic'd up? Are they going to show the world that? Or is this year going to be a living hell for them? I'll tell you where I'm sliding toward. I think this is going to be a long year for the Astros.
Do you really?
I think it's going to be brutal. The road is going to be rough. Either they're going to come together and say, man, it's just us in this foxhole. Everybody, the world's against us. Let's show them. Or it's going to get to them and they're going to sink. I get it. They're wildly talented. But this year is going to be different. It is going to suck when they leave home. It's going to be bad. And, oh, by the way, we don't know how they're going to look when they don't know what's coming.
Well,
how are they going to hit?
Here's the thing, though.
Are they as good as we think they are?
I think they're pretty talented. I think this was all very silly that they did this because I think they're a talented team, and they're saving grace. And why is it
silly? They got to the World Series 2 out of the last 3 years.
I'm aware. I know.
Or 2 out of 4, whatever it is.
No, I know. But I think they're a very talented team. I mean, they were touted when they tanked and they got all these prospects that, hey, this team, what was it, Sports Illustrated had the cover, this team will win in 3 years.
But do you know what you just said? You just said, you know, but Barry Bonds was really good before that. He was really good.
I know.
You didn't have to do that.
I know. They did it. I understand. They did it. And that's the thing that I will never understand of why when you had all that talent. Look, they're going to have a rough time on the road. Because they're going to get it from fans, and they should, and they deserve it. But from a strictly baseball standpoint, they hired the right guy. If there was ever a hire to make in a situation like this, it's Dusty Baker. And I think Dusty Baker, and I know you and Ryan have had some spirited debates over Dusty Baker over the years, but I think he can get this ship righted and get these guys, you know, where they need to be. And still be talented and still possibly be a playoff team.
Does Dusty know now when he makes a pitching change they have to see 3 batters? Does he know that?
I would think so.
Probably not, yeah. Somebody needs to tell him that. Like you can't.
Did Willie, did you know that?
Yeah.
I like that rule.
I don't like it.
I love it. Dusty's going to be, he's going to, I don't know if he's, how he's going to handle this.
You, old school guy, I know.
This will keep Tony La Russa from ever coming back.
That's true. I don't like it. We'll see. I mean, I'm open-minded. I just think there's so many other ways to speed up the game, and I don't think this is going to speed it up that much. But I guess they got to try.
Do you like the roster limit rules?
Yes. I do like that. I like that a lot.
I mean, September,
that is a good move,
yeah.
I think, to do it that way.
But I like 26.
Well, tell people what you're talking about that don't know.
Okay.
Well, you're going to have an extra guy for the regular season.
26 man rosters.
Which will give you a little more versatility. You won't have as many, hopefully because of this, pitchers who have to pinch hit in extra inning games or position players who have to pitch, because now you can carry a little bit deeper of a staff and still have the right amount of guys on your bench.
But you can only carry a max of 13 pitchers.
And if you can't make it work with 13 pitchers, then I can't help you.
Right.
You know? And now you can't just use a guy for one hitter, so you might have rosters that choose to have 11 or 12 pitchers and carry an extra position player. Might be worth looking at. But I still think they'll probably go 12 or 13, most of them.
28 in September, max of 14 pitchers.
That's
so
when the games really get long, is when you have the specialists coming in, you have a 40-man roster to work with, the game completely changes. So I don't know why that didn't happen years ago, really.
Mm-hmm.
I like that rule a lot.
You can designate somebody as a two-way player. So Shohei Ohtani would be an example of this. This can be a pitcher or a hitter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's new, that you can have an actual two-way player. They've never really had that designation before.
But what does that do, I guess, in terms of that counts towards the 13? That doesn't count towards the 13?
No, yeah, they're like in their own category. So a two-way player, someone who both hits and pitches, is now an official designation. That lets them stay on the roster as a position player and pitch in games without counting towards the team's 13-pitcher
So he could be limit. The 14th pitcher,
right?
Basically. But there's no rule that says you couldn't put the first baseman into pitch.
Right.
I don't understand what the big deal is about that rule.
So
if Darren's my third baseman, I can still, in a mop-up situation, I can say, Darren, you go get the last out here.
But that's different. This is just because they have like a pitcher limit.
Right.
I mean, Jose Canseco can pitch. So, you know, I mean, you can just pull guys and
I mean, I guess this rule is just to designate Ohtani. He's the only guy that I know of that falls into this category, right?
Yeah. Now, Michael Lorenzen for the Reds.
Michael Lorenzen is a legit hitter, but he's a pitcher who happens to be able to hit. But I guess they could designate him.
They can put him as a two-way player.
If they wanted to have 13 other pitchers besides him, which I don't really get.
All right, we'll come back with Nashville SC CEO Ian Ayer. That's next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yesterday was a big day for soccer in our city. I mean, a big day. We talked about it a lot yesterday on the show, and to talk about it a little bit further here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Ian Ayer, Nashville SC CEO. Ian, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
I would hope you woke up with a big smile on your face today.
Yeah, a big smile, a little bit of a hangover. No, I'm joking.
You guys did have the festivities tonight. We had, unfortunately, we were all working at Bridgestone Arena around the Predators game, but we did have people from the station there working it, and they said it was a great turnout, a great event.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And, you know, we're so lucky that, you know, every event we've done in the build-up to this big start on the 29th of February, we've had incredible support and turnout from supporters and fans. So it was more of the same, really, in that regard. Big audience, lot of noise, really, really good vibe. And obviously off the back of, you know, making some progress yesterday on our stadium. So a good day.
Can you tell us on the record, Ian Ayer, can you just tell us right now today and close the book, is this thing officially over? Can we finally say this book is done? Is it over?
Well, you know what? I really hope so. You know,
me too.
I think when you sign up to something, right? You know, if I come down the station now and we make a deal and I shake hands with you and we sign something, then we you would hope that we can sit here and say it's done and we're getting on with it. But, you know, we have to have some respect for us being a little bit pessimistic and cautious, you know, because we feel like we got rolled over a bit on this. So yes, we feel confident that we can push on now and get everyone focused on getting into the stadium in 2022. It's going to be an incredible building and a home for the team. I just hope that all the promises that have been made this time, you know, get delivered. And we'll certainly deliver on our end as we have consistently, but, you know, we can't control other people.
What does it say about your ownership group, John Ingram and the whole group, that, like you said, you know, there was an agreement in place and we don't need to relive it all. And you guys had to go back to basically the bargaining table and revise and step up and pay more money. What does it say that they were willing to do all that to make sure they saw this through to the end and then it happened?
Well, you know, it's a great question because I said this at the event last night that for me, you know, there was only one hero in this process, and that was John Ingram. You know, there's no question we had a deal, a real deal, cast iron, you know, overwhelming vote for that deal. And the mayor asked John Ingram to come to the table because the city's got some financial issues. And great testament to John Ingram that he looked at that. It's his city. He cares about this city. You know, he said it last night. This comes from his heart. And so he was prepared to take some of those things that had been agreed in a, you know, in a legal agreement off the table because he wants the city to be successful as much as he wants soccer to be successful. I feel it's a little, well, not a little. I just feel it's wrong when you have that negotiation whilst you kind of put the brakes on progress while you're doing that. It kind of feels a little bit one-sided to me, but great testament to him that, you know, he's a much nicer person than I am. Let's put it that way. And he did the right thing for the city and he did the right thing for soccer.
I've got a marketing idea for your first night in your new stadium, okay? It's going to be T-shirt night, and they're going to put these T-shirts on every seat, and everybody is going to put on their Parcel 8C T-shirt. It'll be Parcel 8C T-shirt night. That'll be fun. First night in the new stadium.
I love it. Fantastic. In fact, you know, if we get enough, we can probably build 8C with what's left over of the T-shirt.
I think they should just hang a banner with 8C on it and just say it's retired. That's the ring of honor.
It could be part of a banner process. There you go.
I love it.
We're talking to Ian Ayer.
You guys are marketing geniuses.
We're talking to Ian Ayer, Nashville SC's CEO, and the team is going to begin their journey in the MLS here coming up on February the 29th. So, Ian, just tell us about opening night. I know playing Atlanta, you start thinking, hey, if you get a decent draw in terms of weather, what are the possibilities here in terms of a crowd? I know you guys are already well on your way, and this is going to be a historical deal.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all of the ingredients are there for a really, really spectacular night. You know, it's us against Atlanta, our biggest rivals, very recent champions in the league, and, you know, a big team to play against. It's the opening game of the 25th season of MLS. It's our first game in MLS. We're already over 40,000 tickets sold. I don't know the exact number because they're literally, if you go in there in our ticketing room, you know, in the last few days particularly, these things are flying out the door. You know, we would love to break the record. I think the record is around 50-something for Nissan for soccer. We'd love to smash through that. I'd love to fill the place, honestly. I think this is one of those big, historical, one-time opportunities to be part of something in Nashville. And we've seen in the past, whether it was the NFL draft or the playoffs and, you know, for the Preds, you know, I've seen and heard about these incredible nights that Nashville comes out for. And this is going to be one of them. You know, it's going to be our first ever game in the major league. And, you know, people are already showing that they want to show up.
I noticed we always get these emails with different things and possibilities and probabilities, and they have you guys as the biggest underdog in the league, and I guess that's not a big surprise your first year. But How do you feel like personnel-wise you'll stack up against the average team in the MLS? I mean, what should expectations be? What are your expectations?
Well, it's interesting. I had that conversation with our coach, Gary Smith, and our GM, Mike Jacobs, the other night after one of our preseason games. You know, the fact that we were being pegged as last place or second to last place. We love that, by the way. I'll take that any day. Nothing like, you know, being the sort of underdog in the fight. But what I would say is this, that the people that I think you should measure, you know, it's impossible to measure how good you're going to be at this point, right? So, you know, we're playing preseason. You can't take anything from results in preseason till you get in the season, get some games under your belt, you know, how other teams are doing and so therefore how well you're performing. You really never know. But what I would say is that the best feedback I think we've had and the stuff that counts for the most is both myself and Mike Jacobs have had several, whether it's GMs or CEOs of other teams, reach out to us and say, we think you guys are really going about building your roster in a really smart way. And that bodes well, right? And even things like this week where we announced Walker Zimmerman coming, you know, that was a really calculated piece of work, particularly on Mike Jacobs' side, where, you know, rather than diving in, as we've had a number of other opportunities for that position in the last month or so, and we waited and waited until we saw what we really, really wanted and ended up with, you know, I believe one of the best central defenders, certainly in this country, and playing for the U.S. national team. You know, it's a big deal. It's the largest deal ever for a central defender or for a defender in MLS. But we asked about that player 5-6 months ago and were told no chance. And by being smart, being patient, you know, being thoughtful, we ended up with what we wanted. And we feel good about what we've assembled, but it's impossible to say until we start playing what that looks like.
Ian Ayre is with us, the CEO of Nashville SC. And, you brought up the Mike Jacobs, the general manager. Obviously, he's somebody that people know from the USL club. Gary Smith, the head coach, was the head coach of the USL club. How important was it to keep some continuity between the two so fans that got on early and got involved are able to have some familiarity as the MLS comes to town?
Yeah, for me, when I arrived, which is just under a couple of years ago, obviously they were both here and both in the USL team. It was kind of a two-step process for me. The first step was to even decide whether they were good enough to come on the journey as individuals. You know, that for me was crucial. You know, there was no special deal for them because they were already here. And John Ingram and I talked about that when I was talking about taking this role. I said, look, you know, it's great that you've got some people in your USL team, but that, you know, and he's like, absolutely, you know, we only want the best for our MLS team. So once I'd established that they were both, you know, very competent and very capable, it was then about assessing them against the rest of the market. And I was very honest with both of them that I was going to do that. And then, you know, it almost became theirs to lose in my book because you just used the word continuity. And in a one-time-ever period where you have to build a whole roster, there was no stronger, you know, piece that they both had, which was that continuity in the sense that we could bring players last year to a USL team and you know that they would come on the journey with us. And I could also see how Gary is around players during difficult moments. I could see how Mike was in recruitment. It's so valuable to do that rather than, you know, just kind of operating outside of the game almost, you know. And so having your coach in the building, having your GM in the building for the last, you know, almost 2 years has been such a benefit. We, you know, we go into this thing all knowing each other, all knowing how we all operate, all knowing how we all work together. And I think that's a hugely valuable asset.
Ian, one thing that I remember, because I've grown up in this town, is when the Predators got here, there was a lot of, you know, hockey fans that were all in from the very beginning. And then there were people like me that, it's not that I wasn't a fan, I just didn't understand the sport. So I had to learn as I went along, and there were, the club did a lot of things to help fans like me learn more about the sport. How important has that aspect been for you guys as there, you got 40,000 fans ready to come to the first game, but there is a group that they just don't understand soccer. They want to learn. They want to embrace Nashville SC, but what are you all doing to help that along?
Yeah, it's a great point, and I've heard all the stories about the sort of hockey 101 from way back when, and I'm a really good friend in Sean Henry and others who've been around the team different points in time, and same thing really. I guess the one thing I would say about soccer is I think most people have a general understanding of the sport, whether it was from playing in high school or little league or whatever it might be. So it's a much easier game to learn than others. But we will be doing some soccer 101. We're doing some of that with the media. We'll get you guys in because it sounds like you need it. But we really want to, there's two things. One is when people come to that game, whether they come opening game or following games, we want to get them to understand the whole thing. It of course, it's about 22 guys on a field playing in the game, but it's also about the whole experience, about the crowd participation, the audience participation, the experience of being at a soccer match. And we think we have a really big piece of work to do with all those people who are kind of, we know the soccer enthusiasts, we know the sports enthusiasts who know soccer. We've got those guys. They're making big commitments to season tickets. There's also a lot of curious people. I heard about this Major League Soccer thing. I might go take a look. We have a real job to do to convert them over to see that it is more inclusive than any other sport. It is more diverse than any other sport. It is, whether you're, families with little kids or whether you're old like me or whether you're a millennial or what, there's something for everyone and everyone's welcome. And they sound like cliches, but it genuinely, I think, I've seen a slide, an MLS slide recently. It's like, that soccer's a sport for a new America, and Nashville is a new city in a new America, a big change in diverse kind of audience here. And I think it's set up perfectly for soccer. And, we'll do everything we can do to make people understand the game, to get them involved in the stuff. And we have some really exciting stuff we're going to unveil next week around what will go on at games and, and some of that 101 type stuff. So we think we'll do a big job to engage people once we get going.
Ian, just to follow up on that, I feel like I know the sport. My daughter plays, et cetera. The rules are not what I'm worried about. My biggest learning curve is going to be to learn your players. You have the sea of players that you've been scouting all around, the world, really, as we've talked about before. So getting to know who does what are their strengths, who are our best players, I feel like that's where the education's got to come for a lot of us.
Yeah, and that's what we will do. Again, you have to remember that most of these guys literally only came to town in the last 6 to 8 weeks. And so as we get through the important piece of preseason, which is going on right now, where they're getting fit and playing games and getting minutes, a big part of what our marketing and our teams will do is they'll start to build these identities. They'll start to push out, whether it's digitally or other forms in, print media, television, radio. You'll see, a real building of each player and who they are and what they participate in and what their role is on the field. So, and it's, it's interesting for me because, of course, I came here just under 2 years ago and I've had to go through the same process for football here, right? So I now know what a running back is, and I know what a wide receiver is, and it's the same thing. You're absolutely right. I needed somebody to give me that, and we will build that out by creating a real recognition of each of the players and what they represent and what their role is, and all those good things. And the great thing about that is, and not by design particularly, but we have some really great characters within that group, and I think that will really warm itself, and a really diverse group. We have players from, we have five Hispanic players. We have a couple of European players, three African players, a load of American players. There's kind of a real mixed bag of players in there, and I think that's really good for Nashville.
Remember, Parcel 8C T-shirt night. It'll be fun. Can't wait.
We're having that, and we're having a demolition party. So,
that'll be great.
That'll be fun.
Grab
too.
A sledgehammer, Darren.
Come on down. And my safety goggles. I'll be on over in a minute.
I think as our owner said, John Ingram yesterday, he said he thinks he knows where he can get some C4. So it should be a big party.
Well, maybe we won't come. Ian, thanks for the visit. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate your support.
All right, we'll see you soon. Ian Ayer, Nashville SC CEO. We'll come back, close out hour number two next. We had fun last night at Barrel House. After the Predators' 5-0 victory over New York, Hal Gill, the love doctor.
Oh, boy.
Giving out Valentine's Day.
That was great.
Advice.
He's giving me advice. We can't air it, but it's you know, sound.
The show is really good on the air. The show off the air is just as good, if not better.
Oh, it's...
It's why, honestly, a lot of people stick around to the very end of Barrel House Week, which is great because... Hal is crazy fun, and we have a good time. Of course, it's a lot easier and wins, so I hope they keep winning at home.
We call that portion of the show HAD, Hal After Dark.
Yeah.
Or HAB, Hal After Beer. You could do that.
So he was in, we were in good spirits last night. It was a lot of fun.
Well, we talked about this yesterday on the show. They had played 17 out of 24 games on the road, so they hadn't had a lot of home games over the last couple of months to start with. And then you take the home games, and among those, there have been some really rough performances by the Predators where nobody's in a good mood leaving the building. So it was so nice to have a game where the Predators clicked. And as we said, with now it's 7 of the next 9 are at home. This is a really important stretch to start getting their act together. If they can start doing that, get a good vibe, have confidence, get the crowd going, some good things can happen here in this next stretch. So I thought it was hilarious for Hal to say last night, the ask Hal, he said when the team loses and they don't look good, he gets flooded with all these questions for the Ask Hal
segment. It's true. It is really true.
Yeah, what's wrong with this guy? What's wrong with this line over here? Why can't they do this? What's the deal with the penalty kill? And he said, you know, you win 5-0. And it was crickets. You're not getting any questions.
I was glad he did that because he's right. I mean, I see the same stuff. And, you know, when they lose, everybody's going to jump in there. Everybody, how do you fix this? What's going on? They win 5-0 impressive fashion. Craig Smith has a hat trick and nothing. Now, obviously, it picked up after that and got a lot of questions. But to that point, they were just like... just trickling, and it was barely. It was like a boop. You know, it was like the slow heartbeat.
Right.
Boop.
So that was a funny rant by Hal.
It was. And then, you know, and he was right. I'm glad he did it because I see the same stuff, and it's after every home loss, it's, oh my gosh.
They're out of it.
Tell everybody. That's the point. This new coach is not working.
Fire
it's not
everyone.
Working.
Fire Hines.
They win, you know, like nothing. Get nothing. But that was
the nature of the beast. As we said, the whole thing is because you have a passionate fan base, this is part of what you get.
No question.
And we love the passion. You got to love it.
And I'll say this, because we all know that the fan base grew when they went to the Stanley Cup Final, which – I know there are some fans that are like, oh, the bandwagon. I don't care. Grow the fan base. That's how you do it. Winning helps all that. But this is also what you get when things don't go well, when things don't go your way. You have those same people that were jumping on that now want to jump off, and they're like, fire everybody. Oh, this is awful. What? Trade this guy. Trade that guy. I find it funny. I just think it's funny.
Well, typically, fan bases are louder when things are bad. Well, they're just louder when things are bad, right? They tend not to be as loud when things are good. That's just, unfortunately, the nature of the beast with most fan bases in any sport, right? They love to bellyache, and they love to be heard whenever things aren't going well. But, you know, they tend to be quieter when things are going well. I don't know why. That's just usually how it works. But here's the thing, not to be a Debbie Downer, I don't want to be the Baby Ruth in Punch Bowl. Last night was great. Last night was...
There's a buck coming.
Yeah, there is. But I want to see, and a lot of people want to see this continue, right? Now what's next? Now what happens tomorrow afternoon in St. Louis? What happens here on Sunday at 5 o'clock? What's the follow-up to the really good game? Because as we've talked about, especially here of late, it's about stringing together good games, right? It's not about win one, lose one, win two, lose two. It's not about that. Like, they're going to have to string together wins. They haven't had a three-game winning streak since October. It's the middle of February.
And
By the way, happy Valentine's Day.
The other side of the coin is this. I mean, because it's if one is true, the other is true. I will give them credit for being able to bounce back from some duds, right? They've had some big duds where everybody's been like, what's going on? And then they've come back with a good performance in the next game. It's been very up and down that way. So as we said before, now they're 13-10-2 since that 17-game out of 24 game on the road stretch happened. So they've been there's been a little bit more good than bad. They need more good if they're going to make it to the playoffs. But they haven't had, fortunately, knock on wood, a 1-6-2 stretch, which is really what's put them behind the eight ball. So we'll see. The team is going to practice. We'll see if we get any more clues about Ryan Ellis today at practice. Who knows? Yep. You know, is there a chance he plays? I don't know. I guess today's the next chance for that.
You think there's a chance in this home and home?
Well, just trying to read David Poile yesterday. Yeah, he said, they have a process. You go through a day, and they say, how do you feel? Right? And every day that you feel good, right, there's no setbacks, then you do a little bit more the next day. And he even said, there's been a little – they've been able to have a little contact at practice, which is, now we're getting towards the end. You got to be able to take hits, give out hits, bounce off of people, and still feel good at the end of it. So I don't know. But reading David Poile, he said, I feel like it's close if there are no setbacks.
And by the way, Ryan Ellis is scheduled to be my guest on Smashville Live Wednesday night at Brewhouse Cool Springs. So.
Will you be welcoming him back to the lineup?
Well, you have Saturday, Sunday.
So. That would be cool, huh?
Yeah.
Tuesday, Carolina, is that right?
Yep. That's right.
So you got three games. Is it possible he plays in one of those three? Maybe Carolina's the night. Yeah. I don't know. This is all speculation on my part. We're all hoping, but you got to be careful.
Austin Watson will be there too, and he'll probably be doing some stand-up beforehand. So.
He's a funny guy.
He is.
He's a lot of fun to deal with. All right, we'll come back. Third hour, we kick it off with You Just Made the List. Tell us who or what has made you mad. We've got a prize attached to it. We'll take your calls on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.